After winning the presidency by a razor-thin margin on November 8, 1960, over Richard Nixon, Dwight Eisenhower's vice president, John F. Kennedy became the 35th president of the United States. But beneath the stately veneers of both Ike and JFK, there was a complex and consequential rivalry. In the new book, Rising Star, Setting Sun, John Shaw focuses on the intense 10-week transition between Kennedy's electoral victory and his inauguration on January 20th, 1961. Again, the name of the book is Rising Star, Setting Sun, Dwight D. Eisenhower, John F. Kennedy, and the Presidential Transition That Changed America. And it's a pleasure to welcome John Shaw to the roundtable this morning. John, thank you very much for being with us.
Good morning, Joe.
Good morning. What makes, and in this case, what made a transition interesting to you?
A lot of things. I might even just briefly tell you the backstory of this book, because I had finished a book on John F. Kennedy's Senate career and had still a lot of things I was thinking about him. Happened to be in a bookstore, and I was browsing through an anthology of the great speeches in American history, about 50 of them, many of them separated by 5, 10, 15 years, something like that. And then I noticed that two speeches were separated by 3 days. And this was Eisenhower's farewell and Kennedy's inaugural. So the thing that pulled me in initially was just this whole notion of two of the great speeches in American history separated by 3 days. And these speeches kind of go against type, because in Eisenhower's farewell, he warns about the military-industrial complex and gives a rather dovish speech, whereas Kennedy in his inaugural is a very fiery, you know, pay any price, bear any burden theme speech. So, Joe, that's what pulled me in initially, just thinking initially these two speeches and how what an important moment it must have been in American history to listen to these two great speeches separated by a couple days. And then I pulled back a little bit and thought, well, just this whole transition from Eisenhower, the oldest president at the time, to Kennedy, the youngest, and literally a generational change in power was something really interesting to explore.
So what is fascinating is that you look at 10 weeks. So that is a short period of time, yet so much happens. You write about this, and it really is fascinating, the relationship between these two men. It is a complex and consequential rivalry that these two men have. Talk a little bit about that relationship.
Well, I mean, it was almost out of Shakespeare or the Bible or Greek mythology, because you had these two extraordinarily different people. Different generations, different backgrounds, different temperaments. And the truth is they really didn't know each other. And what they did know about each other, they didn't particularly like. You know, for Eisenhower, he saw Kennedy as almost a preposterous pretender, someone who had a very thinly credentialed Senate career, not a heavyweight, not a major player. And the notion of Kennedy stepping in as president, a man who was then 43, about the age of Eisenhower's son, just seemed incredible. And particularly since Eisenhower did not like the campaign that Kennedy had run to win the presidency, in which he defeated Eisenhower's vice president, Richard Nixon. But the whole thrust of the Kennedy campaign was not so much an attack on Eisenhower, but an attack on the Eisenhower administration as being slow, reactive, ponderous, sort of antiquated. So Eisenhower was not disposed to like Kennedy. They had only met once before the transition. Kennedy didn't know Eisenhower very well. I think he respected him as, you know, obviously the military leader who defeated Hitler, but was also prone to see him as a sort of out of touch, lethargic, you know, heavily bureaucratic man. So his inclination was not to like Eisenhower very much. So they began this 10 weeks knowing each other very slightly, but what they did know, they did not like very much.
Of course, both had reputations. Kennedy certainly as an up-and-comer, and Eisenhower, and it surprised me in the book that they had not met more, given the rise of Kennedy through the party.
Well, that's in fact fascinating, because Kennedy's 8 years in the Senate overlapped entirely with Eisenhower's 8 years as president. So they were in Washington the whole time together. And they were, to be fair, there was some, you know, bill signings and big group meetings or in which Kennedy and Eisenhower, you know, might have exchanged a pleasantry or two. But in terms of a one-on-one conversation and meeting, that just didn't happen. And again, you know, Kennedy was, for part of this time, he was in the minority party. He was a young senator, a backbencher. And so Eisenhower, you know, would spend more of his time dealing with the Senate and House Democratic heavyweights, Sam Rayburn, the Speaker, Lyndon Johnson, then the Senate Democratic leader. So he spent most of his time working with those people and saw Kennedy as sort of a second-tier senator and probably not worth him spending a lot of time dealing with.
One of the big points of the book is that this is much more than a transition of presidential power. This is a generational shift in American politics and in policy and in culture. It was reflective of what was happening to the country. And do you think both men realized the cultural stakes at which they were playing at the time?
You know, I think they do. I think they understood that something big was happening. You know, Kennedy, and it's interesting, as this transition unfolded, I think they developed a grudging respect for each other that they probably would not have been quick to confess to anyone, certainly to each other. But, you know, Kennedy, as he dealt with Eisenhower and his Eisenhower team, came to see that he was a hugely formidable guy, that he was tough, he was disciplined, he had flashes of humor. He was just a very, very formidable guy. And for Eisenhower, Kennedy prepared for the two meetings they had during this transition very carefully. He was extremely well briefed substantively, and he also had an intuitive sense of how to deal with Eisenhower. He was very deferential to him. He listened rather than spoke. He arrived without an entourage, which he intuited was really important for Eisenhower. So as this transition was unfolding, I think they realized it was a big moment. I think they developed a respect for each other, and particularly, I think, powerful in the current time we're living in. Both of them approached this with a deep sense of responsibility. Eisenhower in particular said, you know, this is for the good of the country that we have this transfer of power unfold smoothly in an organized way. And even though Kennedy is not my preferred candidate, he's going to be the next president, so we need to make this work well. And likewise, Kennedy read Eisenhower and knew that it was in the best interest of the country and himself to treat the outgoing president with respect and deference and to be prepared for the meetings that they would have.
This is a man, Kennedy, who Eisenhower had referred to in 1960 as a whippersnapper. So here he comes in and he wins the election. What I'm interested in that dynamic, but I'm also interested in what Eisenhower made of Nixon, because when Eisenhower thought about who would take over his job, Nixon was almost, you write, always at the top of that list. But that relationship had its issues too, didn't it?
It did. I mean, Eisenhower and Nixon were not close. And Eisenhower, you know, really from the get-go during their eight-year association with Nixon as vice president, you know, he never felt warm to him. He never particularly respected Nixon. Nixon was the dutiful, hardworking operative who, you know, did some of Eisenhower's dirty political work. You know, he traveled the world for him, but they never developed a warm relationship. Eisenhower did not think Nixon ran a good campaign in 1960. He thought he took far too much, you know, firepower from Kennedy in terms of verbal assaults in the Eisenhower administration, and did not really wage a spirited and persuasive counter response. So he was not pleased with the campaign that Nixon ran, and was disappointed, of course, in the outcome, which he saw as a repudiation of his presidency.
So let's talk about the actual transition, where the work is done from one president giving power and transferring that power over to another person who has been elected. and what that was like for the men, because as you say, they're yes, it could be grudging, but they were very committed to work together. What were the positives in that 10-week span and the relationship that allowed them to do that in a way that had a peaceful transfer of power?
I think the best decision they made is choosing their liaisons to run the transition. They chose probably two of the best people they could have. Eisenhower selected his chief of staff, a gentleman by the name of Wilton Persons, who was this military guy, legislative liaison on Capitol Hill for several decades, knew everyone, was a soft-spoken, laconic Alabaman, got along with everyone, made things work. So he was Eisenhower's liaison. Kennedy chose Clark Clifford, a powerhouse Democrat from back in the Truman days. The two guys both knew Washington really well. They knew each other and liked each other, and they were just very committed to making sure the transition worked and also making sure that the transition did not unfold in the nation's newspapers and television networks. So they were smart enough to give out a few boilerplate remarks to the press, but much of this transition went under the radar because these two guys, they met two or three times a week. They talked almost every day on the phone, and they were the mechanics who made sure that the transition trains ran on time. And both men, Eisenhower and Kennedy, chose really, really significantly skilled operatives to make the transition work.
You write in the book that the American people were, for the most part, uplifted and reassured by the 10-week transition from Dwight Eisenhower to John Kennedy, culminating in the stirring inaugural ceremony on January 20th, 1961. There was broad agreement that the transition had been executed amicably and professionally. Kennedy and Eisenhower were both pleased with their efforts. How true was that, really?
You know, I think the mechanics of the transition unfolded pretty smoothly. I think that was, that's to me at least clear. You know, the thing is, transitions occur in a fast-moving world, and lots of things were going on that the transition could not perfectly capture. For example, you know, the international crises were raging. There was a big crisis in terms of gold and the American dollar. There was, simmering tensions between the United States and Cuba. There was ongoing war in Southeast Asia, both in Laos and Vietnam. And I think, you know, as you look back from the distance of a half century, you can see that, some of these issues perhaps advanced further along the line during this 10-week period, specifically Cuba, you know, because the Eisenhower administration was utterly convinced that Castro had to go. They had begun early planning on ousting Castro, and they handed the Kennedy administration at least a conceptual plan that it felt pressured to implement. And they changed it in significant ways and implemented it in a flawed way. So big international things unfolded during this 10-week transition that, as we look at it from the hindsight of history, we see some big problems that were not were not nipped in the bud during the transition, and arguably were actually made worse.
You also write in the book about, after this transition, that of Eisenhower's own legacy, because here Eisenhower is leaving Washington after, 50 years of public service, five-star general, a hero, and a president of the United States for two terms. And he leaves, and then just 2 years later, there's a survey taken. He comes in near the bottom of the list of the ranking of the American presidents, and that really bothers him, doesn't it?
It does. And I guess, Joe, the perhaps the overarching theme of this whole book, I use the title Rising Star, Setting Sun, in a way to capture what the moment looked like in January 1961 as Eisenhower is leaving and Kennedy is arriving. And from that moment, it appeared that Eisenhower was going to fade from view, you know, had done solid work, but had been an unspectacular presidency, and Kennedy was going to go on to dominate American politics for at least the next decade. As we know, less than 3 years later, Kennedy is killed in Dallas. Eisenhower lives on to the end of the 60s. 1969 is when he passed away. And so Eisenhower's legacy has turned out to be much more substantial than it appeared at the time. And as you suggested, polling back then by historians put him in a lower tier of presidents. Now there's recent polling has him fourth or fifth as most successful president. So history has been very, very kind to Dwight Eisenhower, in part because a lot of documents that are coming out that show that a lot of things that seemed like had been random were actually carefully thought through. But I think Eisenhower's legacy has improved with the passage of time. And I think he would have been, I think he hoped that was going to be the case, but he was uncertain as he left office.
It's a fascinating book. It is called Rising Star, Setting Sun, Dwight Eisenhower, John F. Kennedy, and the Presidential Transition That Changed America. The book is published by Pegasus. John Shaw, a pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much, Joe.
Thank you. Again, the name of the book, Rising Star, Setting Sun. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.